o'clock, this meeting was scheduled for 2 o'clock until 17 hours, and that we conduct our business of this meeting in a businesslike fashion. Good afternoon to the honourable members, members of the ad hoc committee in the NCOP dealing with the Section 100 intervention in the province of North West. Also welcome to the Honourable Premier of North West, Honourable Professor Mokgoro. We spoke to each other yesterday and requested to be present, the Honourable Premier. Welcome, Premier. To the leader of the Interministerial Task Team, Honourable Minister Dlamini Zuma, welcome, leading your team, phenomenal team. Also welcome to the Honourable Ngesi from Public Works, Honourable Sukwana from Agriculture. I deal with him quite frequently in my province agricultural department because I've got a rural area where agriculture is a main activity. And to the Director Generals, to the administrators, and they will be introduced. I believe the Chief Coordinator is also present. Welcome to you. Welcome to our staff component that assisted us to arrange this meeting. I've got apologies for the Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister of Finance. They are having their annual budget council Lekgotla, which started today. But the National Treasury is represented by Mrs. Mary Macheka, Director of Provincial Budget Analysis. So she's here, thank you very much. There's questions coming to your way. I think I've done the apologies. Apologies from members, excuse me, is Honourable Wana and Honourable Swane. That's the written apologies that I received. Sorry, I forgot the Director General of Finance also a written apology because he's at the Budget Council Lekgotla. Honourable Motla Shipping, where's the written apology? Pardon? Yes, it must be submitted. That's the rule. A rule is a rule. We're not here to break rules. Honourable members, honourable ministers, today we are continuing our engagement as we started on the 14th of June 2018 with the IMTT coming to brief us on the then invoking of the Section 101A and 101B intervention in this province. We conducted a session where the provincial leadership, the government, led by the Honourable Premier Mokgoro from the Northwest Province, came to make submissions to this ad hoc committee and we received the picture of the province from their side. On the 7th of August 2018, our researchers and content advisors took us through a consolidated document that was a result and a document capturing all the submissions from the first IMTT meeting plus the provincial government's submissions into one document. It just makes it easier to handle. That was the 7th of August, and today we are here to get an update on the latest developments and progress made by the Interministerial Task Team in terms of the intervention. Honourable members, you received by email the documentation. I call it a three-in-one. Three documents, but it actually addresses the whole matter we are going to discuss this afternoon in terms of the progress. And with that short introduction, Honourable Minister Dlamini Zuma, I'm going to hand over to you and your team to take us through the presentation. Welcome again. You may address us.
Uh, Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to all the honourable members, to the ministers who are here, and officials, administrators, and the entire team. And I'm just going to give a brief overview, and then I'll hand over to the DG to give you a bit more meat. We are here today to present the second report, as the chair has said, of the national government intervention in terms of Section 101 of the Constitution in the Northwest. With us today, we have an entire team that of the administrators, but maybe I'll ask them to stand and introduce themselves at the end, or now, maybe at the end. Yes. Of course, the report is just to give you progress of the intervention in the Northwest Province. And when we last met, we had just done the assessment and we were planning on how to really do this intervention. At the time we met, we had not even appointed administrators except one, which was the One Health, and we had not signed any agreements with the relevant departments. And of course, the background, you all know that this was in response to the widespread community uprisings and labor unrest in the Northwest. I will not go into details about the background, we all know it, except to say that when the intervention was done and the assessment was done, the decision was that the province will be then put under Section 101, and that there will be 5 departments that will be under Section A and 5 that will be under Section 1B. To just recap, Section 1A is where the province is still in charge, but the national gives directives on a regular basis on certain matters of concern. But Section 1B is when the executive authority is more or less removed from the department, from the heads of departments and members of the executive council, and is now vested mainly on the national minister and the administrator that is appointed. Again, to recap, the departments that are under Section 100A are finance, economy and economic development, which is like the provincial treasury, then rural, environment and agricultural development, social development, local government and human settlement, and tourism. Now, with local government, it's under A, but there's been an agreement that certain municipalities will be placed under Section 139 because of the situation in those municipalities. Then the departments that are under Section 100B are the Premier's Office, Health, Education and Sports Development, Public Works and Roads, Community Safety, Transport and Management. So this was just by way of recapping. When we reported last time, we said we were going to sign a memorandum of understanding between the convener of the IMTT and the Premier of the province. there was a slight delay in the signing because when we were ready, there was a change of premier. So we thought there was no point in signing with the acting premier when we know there's going to be a premier appointed. So we waited. Fortunately, it wasn't a long time. And when the premier was appointed, who's here, the professor, Professor Mukoro, we then signed the Memorandum of Understanding on the 28th of June. And this represented a major milestone in the intervention, shifting from assessment and planning phase to the inception of a real implementation and intervention. And the foundation work focused on putting, and then we also did a lot of work around that time, putting the administrative teams as well as deepening the understanding of the institutional environment and challenges and changes that were to be effected. You will recall also that there were issues around labor, there were labor unrest, which consumed quite a significant time and energy in trying to get those under control. And of course, we also had to put controls to address financial issues because there were lots of challenges around irregular expenditure, unauthorized, fruitless, and so on. So we had to address that mismanagement. So the activities in July were primarily taken by the finalizing and signing of protocols between national and provincial departments, and appointing and installing administrators and support teams for the five departments under Section 1B, and of course the ones under Section A issuing directives. The administrators for Section 1B were introduced to the Premier and the Provincial Executive Council on the 5th of July. And of course, under Section B, the administrators also become accounting officers in those departments. So the process of appointing the administrators for the five departments under Section 101B as accounting officers was completed on the 10th of July 2018, and that involves, of course, Treasury. And I can confirm that all the administrators now have been appointed as accounting officers. They are installed in Mahikeng with their support teams. The coordinator of the Northwest Intervention, and this role we decided because of the lessons that were learned from the intervention in Limpopo. And the coordinator has been appointed and is now in Mahikeng. A monitoring system focused on six key result areas has been developed. The system has a range of indicators to provide a picture of the intervention based on a wide range of information sources. The system is currently focused on the fundamentals of tracking implementation plans. Work is underway to activate the monitoring capacity of the Office of the Premier to support the monitoring of the intervention. And these six areas are effective implementation of Section 101A intervention plans, clean governance and institutional capacity, improved service delivery, improved labor relations, effective communication and public accountability, effective coordination and intervention. Now let me just say a few words on the institutional capacity, which is one of the key areas that we're looking at. The Premier is very concerned that he might not have sufficient capacity in the province to actually deal with the challenges that is facing the province expeditiously. As a result, he took an initiative to ask the UN for capacity. But further to our discussion with him as the IMTT, we have agreed that, first of all, let's look at each department and say what are the capacity gaps in those departments, and then make a determination whether National can support those departments and supply that capacity. If not, we also look at our institutions like the BSA, look at even CSIR to see whether they couldn't give us that capacity. Only then can we look at outside. So the process of determining that is underway. The administrators are doing that, and by next week they will hopefully have completed that exercise, which we'll also report to Cabinet. Again, around the issue of institutional capacity, there was a concern whether there was a level of demotivation of the officials, or whether there would be some pockets of resistance. But we are looking at all those things to ensure that we can remotivate if there is demotivation, and work on the issues of resistance if they are there. But the main issue was around capacity, which the Premier, if the Premier was concerned about. Then the coordinating committee envisaged in the memorandum of understanding signed between the Premier and the convener of the IMTT has been established and has met once on the 2nd of August in Mahikeng. This committee brings together all the heads of provincial departments together with the administrators from the national departments. And these meetings are going to be held regularly to track how the intervention is going. And of course, the directives that are being issued by 101A also need to be tracked to make sure that indeed between the ministers and the relevant MECs that work happens. And I must then say that the next detailed report is going to be given by the DG of DPMA, but fortunately all the administrators for the 1B are here, and the coordinator. So if there are any specific questions that might require them answering, fortunately they are here. I would like them to just stand. I have a list here with their names and their departments, but I always find that for better rapport and connection, It's better when you introduce yourself to people than when you are introduced by somebody else. But I have a list. I could introduce them, but I choose not to. So I want you to introduce yourselves to this ad hoc committee, because they are the ones who are actually who have oversight on the work that you are all doing. So this is the committee that is overseeing our work. This is the committee that is going to decide whether we were correct in the first place to have this intervention or not, and then decide whether we're doing our work in the process, and eventually look at the exit report that we will produce. So please, can you start? No, sorry.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and Honorable House. I'm Dibuho Rapuru, and I'm the coordinator of the intervention in the Northwest. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Good afternoon, Honorable Ministers and Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee. My name is Matabata Mukonyama, the Administrator for Community Safety and Transport Management.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and the Honorable House. My name is Joe Musala. I'm the Administrator for the Department of Education and Sports Development.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and members of the House. My name is Sibusiso Mpansa. I'm the Administrator at the Office of the Premier.
Afternoon, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, Ministers. My name is Samuel Tubakhale. I'm the Administrator for Public Works and Roads in Northwest.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Honourable Minister, the Chairperson of the IMTT, Honourable Ministers, and the DGs present here, I am Jeanette Hunter. I am the Administrator for the Northwest Department of Health.
Thank you very much. If it was a family, we would say she is the firstborn, because she started the intervention. She was appointed long before the others. But thank you very much. I'll hand over to the DG.
Just to the administrators, congratulations. You've got a mammoth task in front of you, but success is a continuous investing in excellence. Then you get and reach success. We wish you well in your assignment. Thank you. DG.
Thank you to the Honourable Chairperson of the Ad Hoc Committee, Honourable Ministers that are here present, and the Honourable Members of the Ad Hoc Committee, Directors General who are here present, and other senior officials. Thank you very much for the opportunity for us to provide more detail supplementary to the Minister's presentation with respect to the progress report on the intervention in the Northwest. I will start off, Honourable Chairperson, with just the highlights of the progress that has been achieved that relates to particular areas, but in doing so, we'd like to elevate these issues for particular attention so that we can then deal with the detail per department. But in summary and in total, the success of the implementation so far indicates that a lot of progress has been made in the stabilization of governance in the province of Northwest. Importantly, focusing on the financial management issues, we can indicate that progress has been made with respect to irregular contracts which are being weeded out, irregular expenditure, and the team has paid particular attention to the issues of audit findings that were principally indicated from the previous years, and those are being addressed and progress is being made with respect to those audit findings. The intervention has also done a lot of work in dealing with the supply chain management practices. In certain instances, the structures, the committees, where they have been restored. and particularly in relation to external stakeholders and improving relations in this instance. And the issue, the example of health comes to mind particularly because they started slightly earlier. They have made significantly more progress in the area of stabilizing the relationship with external stakeholders. Similarly, the agreements have been reached with the unions with respect to the community health worker contracts. Also, in the education area, cost-effective methods for building schools are being introduced to deal with the challenge that was indicated around the construction program of a school building. But more importantly, the structure that has been established to support the intervention. The last time we were here with the ad hoc committee, it was June, and the month of July was spent really in setting up the institutional arrangements, establishing the committees, as the minister has quite clearly elaborated, and that we believe from the perspective of the intervention established a very good relationship with the premier, between the premier and the administrators, and increasingly, as the administrators will reflect, the relationship with management and staff is becoming better from day to day as they continue working and engaging with staff. Would also indicate that the Premier actually went on a roadshow with the administrators and introduced them to management and staff, and that really has cemented and created a very good ground for the intervention to be institutionalized and respected. But importantly as well, the minister also indicated that whilst we deal with the local government sector as Section 101A, the real important issue about dealing with municipalities has also reflected some progress, particularly with the institution of recovery plans for 12 of the most distressed municipalities having been achieved. We can confirm, as we will do in the detailed report, that has to do with local government, confirm those arrangements that have been put in place. The summarized progress report has been supplied to the committee, and principally we cover the Section 101B reports in detail, including the annexures per area, but also importantly the Department of Local Government and Human Settlement as motivated by the minister, because it gives us access to that whole area of local government and particularly service delivery. In the report, we may start with the issue of the Office of the Premier. And basically what we had indicated there is that there are several four intervention plans for the Office of the Premier. And in those areas, work has been done in assessing the project management unit contracts and outsourced government business. You will recall that when we reported on the findings, we principally said seems to be a challenging area. The project management units that were appointed in the Premier's office to conduct work in various environments and departments seem to have irregular expenditure and a lot of governance issues in their own right that needed investigation. And I think that issue of the assessment of project management units has been done, is being done, and will be completed. But similarly, the responsibility we placed in the Office of the Premier was the issue related to managing stakeholders, communities, workers. The labor relations environment could really only be solved at the center if line function departments had failed. That issue of attending from a central perspective to the breakdown in relationships between the various sectors is being done quite successfully with the assistance of the Premier in order to just restore trust and get outstanding matters resolved with these various stakeholders. Similarly, the issue around providing transversal support services. You will remember that in this area of Office of the Premier, there was the ICT contract and matters relating to general service provision that cut across very many departments. And again, in this area, they are looking at restoring the service and turning around service delivery. The achievements in respect of this, as we indicated earlier, with the assistance of the Premier, the intervention has truly been institutionalized in the organization, and efforts have been made in securing buy-in of senior managers. As I indicated, the roadshows that the Premier undertook with our administrators to do that. The credibility of the supply chain management practices, both in the office of the Premier and in the administration, and basically reaffirming legal and ethical practices throughout the system. There also has been interventions to deal with processes for payments that exceed 200,000, as well as really in dealing with this issue of the project management unit, specifically to deal with a cost-benefit analysis of the use of the PMUs. Hopefully, this particular administrator will make recommendations very soon about which PMU should continue to operate, which PMU should be shut down, which PMU has been found to be in fact necessary and would continue doing its business. So that outcome would be quite important for us on the basis of the work that they're doing. The second area I'd like to focus on is the Department of Health. And again, in the health area, you would recall that at the time of the findings, the relationship had broken down significantly with the unions, the strikes, which had led, in fact, to the unrest was the primary cause. Agreements have been reached with respect to the contract health workers with the unions in this respect, and has therefore contributed significantly to the stabilization of the provision of health services in the province, and so has the procurement of essential equipment for primary health care facilities, which process has been initiated and is basically under implementation. The issue of the emergency management services is being processed and the outstanding payments to that area is being resolved. You will recall there were times when there were real problems around emergency management services in the health sector. So has some progress been achieved in the area of improving labor relations. And again, the issue of labor relations is a very important one in the health sector. It is improving significantly, but you would know that in that environment, you would get to a point at which you say you would not be able to say the problem has been completely eliminated. It just improves relations, but we are not at the point at which you would say the problem is behind us completely in those various areas. There are significant issues that are being addressed around wastage of budget resources. For instance, in the payment for maintenance of idling equipment, and that's being addressed. And basically, there continues to be discussions with the national and provincial treasury as part of the costing of primary health care and hospital services in order to improve the standard of service that is being provided. Similarly, in this area of the Department of Health, there continues to be areas that can pose a risk to the intervention, and those would remain in the area of labor and community unrest. And that's because until such time that all of the matters are resolved, there's always a potential risk that those issues may flare up in the environment of health, because in fact that environment has really just become very sensitive in the way that matters are being done. The real concern seems to be still potential areas where the community is perceiving waste and wastage in the way that the health services are being provided. So that poses a risk, but it's well managed, and everything in the intervention helps to minimize that particular risk. There are challenges as well around lack of capacity and level of staff and institutions, but that, again, as the Minister indicated, all the efforts around enhancing capacity in line with what the Minister has suggested will actually, health would be prioritized for that particular intervention. Similarly, there still were areas where there were payments of service providers which were delayed, but that's a historical backlog, and the team is working very steadfastly to clear the backlogs of outstanding payments to service providers just to keep the peace and ensure people who are owed money are being paid, and service providers who were previously brought to a standstill are restored and able to continue their services. And that's in the context of those who shouldn't are being investigated because of illegal contracts that are actually in that environment. And then finally, the team is focused also very emphatically on the issue of management and minimization of wasted of budget resources. They are dealing with the issue of contract management and the issues of limiting unnecessary expenditure in the environment, particularly in the maintenance of idling equipment. in the Department of Education and Sports, there have been real challenges in governance and financial management, and the aim of this particular area to restore governance and credibility to ensure that we have credible data across the entire education value system. The key achievements in this area, one of the major issues which was the non-payment of services is actually clearing up this particular issue. The administrators working very hard to clear up the submission backlog in certain cases that dates back to 2014, but also just to re-establish trust and relations in areas of essential services with the service providers and other people in the environment. There's also been quite an extensive level of stakeholder engagement in order to build trust around the turnaround plan. In fact, recently, as indicated, they met with the principals, governing bodies, and a whole lot of stakeholders in the education system in order to get buy-in around the implementation of the plan. The process also of addressing the audit finding of $1.1 billion irregular expenditure has started, and it's possible to remove $350 million of that expenditure for learner teaching material, which has been found as part of that irregular amount, and that means there can be ways in which to regularize and correct some of the areas in this $1.1 billion irregular expenditure, and that can be reduced significantly. But more importantly as well, the initial challenge around education was the school building program, for which interventions have been made both at national and province for cost-effective method of building schools, which actually has ensured that the school building program is restored and they are able to proceed very well on the new arrangements that have been made for the school building program. Administratively, there were challenges around poor quality of submission, and the administrator spent a lot of time dealing with just the lack of capacity, it would seem, in processing matters within the department and also dealing with the issue around processing payments for service providers. In the Department of Community Safety and Transport, you will recall very clearly heads up on the motivation for this section 101B was the area of learner transport and particularly in the transport sector. The progress that has been made in this particular area has been the streamlining of supply chain processes, procedures and policies to ensure that we can restore the learner transport program and enable it, them to provide the critical services in the province. Importantly, there were also issues about transferring functions from the department to the Northwest Transport Investments, which is the entity of the department. In terms of the contracts, particularly the learner transport contracts that were held, but there's an indication now that there is a lot of success that's been made about supporting that entity to enable it to actually execute those functions well. There is an externality to this particular process, and that depends on whether the Gauteng government and the Gauteng province will indeed sign the 7-year contracts with the Northwest province in order to provide certainty and therefore improve principally the financial position of the Northwest Transport Investment Company in order to enable them to, if they have a guaranteed 7-year pipeline from Gauteng, that will enable them to have certainty about the services they provide and also their own financial viability. And therefore the decision would be taken on that basis to keep those particular functions in the public entity rather than in the department. Also the development of detailed plans in terms of the community safety side is currently being done in order to address the shortcomings. The challenges in the transport sector, particularly there's widespread levels of demotivation among staff, which means a lot of work has to be done to provide support to the workers, and the lack of cooperation between the Department of Community Safety and provincial subs, and that's an area that has to be resolved within the context of the intervention. There are also potential threats, budgetary constraints, basically if the intervention is unable to address the particular challenges, and in this particular context, the real challenge is that learner transport is such a critical community service. So no matter what we do in terms of the intervention, it would be very difficult not to be able to meet the critical demands of making sure learners are transported to school. So we'll look at this particular area of budget constraints very carefully so that it does not ever result in learners not being able to be transported. There are also very significant supply chain management and grief service providers which could result in litigation and protest, particularly with respect to the learner transport contract. And again, the complexity of that issue is even if you were to have illegal contracts by learner transport service providers, it's just very difficult to terminate those contracts because the net effect is that school children will not go to school. So there's a very difficult and sensitive management of that process that's necessary, which is a direct relationship between learner transport contracts and the irregular contracts that might have been fined to provide those services and the necessity to continue service provision given the community needs. But it's something that is being managed. It's just we're highlighting it because potentially some may lead to litigation and some may lead to protest, but the aim of this exercise is to minimize them, negotiate, engage with those communities, ensure everybody is happy with respect to this process. The next department is the Department of Public Works and Roads. They've signed a memorandum or their protocol in this particular instance. They've also dealt with the issue of responsibility matrix and project charters. They also have established rational and communication skills amongst the stakeholders to ensure implementation of the intervention plan. They've also dealt with the issue of reviewing the function of cooperatives in the province, as well as resolving issues of non-payment on behalf of the department. The main challenges remain, as you honorable members would recall, that outside of health, the other area that had caused a lot of unhappiness in Northwest Province were the rural roads and public works projects that had either been completed or not fully fulfilled. And there are just heightened expectations amongst communities that these issues will be dealt with urgently. And therefore, public works understands the sense of urgency with which they must act in this area because the community expectations are very high about how they're going to help them deliver and overcome the challenges they face. There also, in many instances, are challenges where the indication is that the grievances have deeper roots and largely cannot be resolved by a stroke of a pen or very quickly. The analysis of what the root causes of problems are highlighting very complex situations, but Public Works is dealing with that situation and they'll be able to keep it under control. Some of the threats are outstanding legal cases against the department, unresolved disciplinary cases. And disputes over payments and disgruntled communities, as we indicated. There's also a high vacancy rate at executive level, which is coupled with alleged threats against staff members for actively supporting intervention efforts. So because the core challenge in public works was related to contracts, it was related to construction work, it was related to those kind of things, this is possibly the one area we could say that threats against staff members who are supporting the intervention are clear and are there. Because this is the area where, in fact, we've been forced to think about the security of even the intervention administrators and others, because this is the area that really relates to capital expenditure and big contracts. In the Department of Local Government and Human Settlements, as we've indicated, a lot of work has been done. Both the minister and deputy ministers have gone into that area and done a lot of work with those municipalities to the point that at this point now the key achievement is that 12 distressed municipalities have passed council resolutions approving the recovery plans, and we can expect that to roll out. But secondly, an initiative that started even, you know, quite early in the process is an intervention led by COCTA in the Tsobotla municipality with the Municipal Infrastructure Systems Agency of the COCTA department supported by the Defense Force engineers who've gone into that area to really clean up the area of Dizobotla. They've done exceptionally well. The community seems to be very happy. In fact, that particular municipality was in serious dire straits, but that work has almost at the level of stabilization, cleaning, sewage spillage and other water problems has really been stabilized. So that's a good achievement, and that can be replicated in other areas as well, but it shows very well how if we work together and move into an area, communities can be quite happy with the intervention in action that they see on the streets and they see alive in those areas. And Dizobotla is possibly now one of those areas that has shown progress in a very short space of time. With respect to the Section 139 directives, a number of issues have been dealt with, particularly the post-audit action plans, appointment of senior management, acceleration of spending of infrastructure grants, financial recovery plans, dealing with bloated municipal structures, organizational structures, the back-to-basic support plans, and more importantly, curbing service delivery protests. The presence of the intervention in a lot of the municipalities means there are people that can be spoken to now. The tension with communities is less because they can be engaged and problems can be discussed. And there's a sense that the intervention will deliver services much more quickly than a municipality where there was a breakdown in relation between themselves and the community at that particular time. With respect to this Department of Local Government, one of the challenges we had indicated was that it would have appeared that this department did not have adequate capacity because their organizational structure was not appropriate for a government department that's looking after that number of municipalities. So the finalization of the departmental structure is due, pending evaluation with DPSA in order to finalize that quite urgently, because the success at local government level depends on a very strong provincial department of local government to actually ensure they can have the capacity and strengthen their ability to manage those municipalities. In human settlement environment, the challenge remains the issue around underperformance of contractors in the housing sector, which in certain instances just creates a potential threat for unrest or not, but the department is also handling that. They are working on projects in every area and ensuring incomplete projects are being completed, and they are working steadfastly within those municipal areas where there are human settlement challenges. In conclusion, Honorable Chairperson, the Northwest intervention, in our view, is really in implementation mode now. We're rolling various areas. There are very few matters that still need to be finalized at the national level. The arrangements are in place. The institutional structures are in place. The various structures that manage it, the meetings between the Premier and the administrators, the meeting between EXCO, the Premier, the administrators, and the national departments are in place. So every structure that's necessary to make this work is operational and has been since July up till now. But despite the short period, we've made, really believe it's stabilized governance and service delivery challenges within the province. There's still a lot of work to be done, but the institutional arrangements are there, the people are there, the teams are there, and they've started really working on ensuring a lot of these issues are dealt with. We've even put a spotlight on the major issues that in the findings were of concern. The issues around irregular contracts, irregular expenditure, the audit findings, which have been running for a number of years, are now the focus of interventions in order to just eliminate them. Restoring credibility of supply chain structures and committees is one of the principal challenges that the administrators are working on. But importantly so is the issue of building relations with the stakeholders and ensuring that the stakeholders understand what's going on. They've got answers about when their issues are going to be dealt with, and they have a sense of comfort about realistically how they need to engage with the process in order to move forward. So there's hope has been restored. There's a good sense that there is a structure that's in charge, and the Premier is part of that structure and in the leadership of that, and it's actually working quite well. We really believe the intervention is making headway towards restoring normalcy with respect to governance and service delivery, and it would appear that the community of Northwest recognizes that and is very supportive of what national government has done so far. Honorable Chairperson, I thank you.
Minister?
Thank you. I think that's the presentation. We're ready to answer the questions. The ministers are here, administrators are here. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister.
We also recognize the presence of the Honorable Masuta, who has arrived. And then there, at the back, the chairperson of the FFC, Professor Blake, is coming from the Free State, my neighbor province. You're actually supposed to sit here, but not there. But he's doing oversight over us today, Professor Blake. Honorable members, we will go to the engagement, but I'm referring you to this document, the one with the colors. Here is the detail of what the team is doing. Here it is. Telling you what is behind schedule, what's in progress, what is completed, and what has not started. So this is part of your homework. I like to give homework. This is part of your homework. On page 13 of this presentation, it's mentioned the not-so-good relationship between the Provincial Department of Safety, Community Safety, and SAPS. On page 125 of the Constitution, section 207, subsection 5, the Provincial Commissioner must annually submit the annual report to the provincial legislator. And this is where the provincial legislator can facilitate that relationship to improve. I speak of experience. I was for 5 years the chairperson of the Safety and Liaison Committee in the provincial legislature in Northern Cape. And it worked 100%. So that's part of the solution. Accolades to the Honourable Premier for your roadshow, Premier, with the team, restoring confidence. I think that's a major point that came out. The buying in of senior management is crucial. And then your example of Disabotla municipality. Well, this recipe must go to other provinces as well. And it's our task as members from different provinces to take this message back. What can be done? There it is. It's a good story. Are there any other submissions from your team? All the members, then we go to the questions.
Maybe just to stress that the defense force didn't only start in Disobotla. You'll recall that when there was a crisis in health, they sent doctors and other medical health personnel to go in and help there.
Because they also have the expertise. It's done in China. If a bridge is to be built and the contractor can't complete it, they call in the army and say, finish the job. That's what happened. And they're successful. Look at their growth rate. Honourable members, questions? Honourable Chetty? Advance? Honourable Kaula? The two of them comes from KZN, where the sun rises. Honorable Nyambi, Kumalanga, Honorable Dlamini, also Kumalanga, and Honorable Monakedi from Limpopo. That's our provinces we come from. Honorable Teblanche, yes, I noted you. In that order, Honorable Chetty.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just have 2 points of clarity for the Minister. I can use my campaign voice, Chair, it's okay. In your initial report to both Cabinet and the ad hoc committee, you initially indicated that 20 out of the 22 municipalities were dysfunctional or distressed. It has been a bone of contention in previous engagements whether it's 20, as per the report sent through from the IMTT, or 12, as opposed to what was presented by the Minister of COCTA. And in today's report, I see you make reference to 12. I just want clarity as to the other 8 that are now no longer reflective. Have they somehow auto-corrected themselves to now fall off the sheet? My second concern, and if you want to make reference, that's referred to on page 16 and 17, where it's now 12 municipalities and no longer 20. My second concern, and this is a serious concern, Minister, yesterday in the NCOP, you're on record as stating that, in regards to a question on the IMTT, that the Northwest Province has expressed a willingness to cooperate in regards to the IMTT and its intervention. Yet, in today's reports, we read the following under risks. I take you to page 6, 4.1.4. As information becomes more sensitive, so is the likely increase in threats against the persons of the administrator and support staff. That's under the Premier's office. Page 8. The threat of labour and community unrest and persistent wastages in supply chain management processes continue to pose a risk. And that's under Department of Health. Page 9, 4.3.5. There's also an increase of a potential whistleblowers and corresponding levels of discomfort among those whose interests are under threat. Security remains a risk for the intervention team who work until late daily. The campus on which the operations of the team are housed does not provide for security personnel after hours. Page 11, 4.4.5, and this is under, sorry, that's cleared one. Page 15, and this is from Public Works. The work of the administrator and the team is further undermined by the high vacancy rate of executive level management positions, coupled with alleged threats against staff members for actively supporting the intervention efforts. Those are 1, 2, 3, 4 departments already. But again, if you go to pages 11, 13, and 17, which is reflective of transport, community safety, and on 17 is dealing with local government. Under those threats, there doesn't seem to be any real risk to the administrator or the team that's working there. Now, I have a concern, Chairperson. It can't be right that the very people who have collapsed this province are still in a position to threaten the very people we've sent out there to go do our work in rectifying the situation. Now, I believe that something more serious has to be done to ensure the safety of the very administrators that just stood up here today to make sure that they are protected. Secondly, Chairperson, and this is where I said it's of serious concern to me, that we can't just say that it's okay and it's acceptable, and yet we read a contradiction in the report, because if I read the report, it's not all hunky-dory there. They haven't embraced the intervention, because had they embraced the intervention, we wouldn't have been reading of these risks here. Thank you, Chair.
I will believe there will be definitely action plans to address the safety matters regarding staff and personnel. Honorable Tablanche.
Chairperson, thank you. First of all, I want to really commend the presentations that we got. And it's quite clear that a lot of hard and good work has been done. So really, I think that, you know, to the extent that apparently the turnaround, you know, is already very visible, things that has been done. I'm just wondering, Chairperson, if you, you know, with the intervention of this nature, you know, it comes to mind, when do you know that the intervention has been successful? Have we, before we start, is there some standard that we formulated that we are working to? When are we going to know that whatever department is back to where it's supposed to be? What is that standard that we're working to? So is there such a standard, and who compiled that, and are we working to that, and what is our projections to get to that point? I'm just asking, you know, project management, obviously you need to work to something, and I haven't heard anything about that. Chairperson, then, you know, once again, it's the old supply chain issues again, and we heard that there are serious interventions there. And, you know, that is just something that we find all over, and yes, we are dealing with the Northwest now, and really a serious effort must be put in to turn that around. Chairperson, then coming to the administrators, and, you know, quite a strong team that we saw in front of us. You know, and it just comes to my mind, how were they appointed? How were they selected? You know, I'm not for 1 second, Minister, you know, doubting their ability, please. But I'm just asking, what process was followed? How do we appoint these people? You know, and then, sorry, I know I'm going to be, people are not going to like what I'm saying now, but I'm going to say it anyway. Chairperson, I couldn't help to see that they are not a very diverse group. You know, it's only males, and only, you know, from one race group, only one woman. So, is that the way that we are tackling things like this? Aren't we supposed to you know, just indicate to the people of Northwest that everybody has been considered and taken into account. Chairperson, that is my small little contribution at this stage. Thank you.
Section 102 of the Constitution tells us that, and tells us the role of the National Council of Provinces to monitor the intervention as long as the intervention is running. And that is part of our oversight role, to see that things go well, because it's about the same sustainability of the intervention post the intervention, as we look at what happened in Limpopo. About Kaula.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister Dlamini Sebalkul, and the ministers, the Honorable Premier, the administrators, and the Northwest team with us, colleagues. DG, thanks for the presentation. I would like to find out, DG, during your first presentation to us, you also touched on possibilities of forensic investigations into possible squandering of finances. And you also touched on the issue of possible criminal charges were relevant, but today you have said nothing on those issues. You have not briefed us as to how far matters have developed there. I would like to know if there's any progress in respect of that area. To the Department of Health, it's reported that they have run, they've exhausted their funds, which poses a threat to the delivery of services. I'd like to find out if anything is being considered to ensure that whilst there may have been that problem in the Northwest, but people continue to get health services. When you reported in your first report to us in respect of the Department of Community Safety and Transport, you said that the intervention was only in respect of transport. But the report that you are receiving is now talking to both transport and community safety. Can you take us on board as to between then and now, what is it that has happened which has necessitated that you also get involved in community safety? The report talks of threats to the lives and safety of the administrators, like my colleague here was saying. I would like to know if anything is being done to ensure that the people who are working in this project are also being kept safe. And the last one, Chairperson, is in respect of COCTA, the local municipality. Is just a concern that you're saying 12 municipalities today, you're saying 12 municipalities that are involved where governance was near to collapse. It's quite a high number. I want to believe that this will not just be a fire extinguishing project. It's to ensure that governance henceforth is also in order. But you said nothing in respect of the capacitation of the councillors, so as to ensure that governance continues properly. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honourable Nyambi.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me also join and commend the team for the detailed report that is giving us a better sense to understand the situation. Chair, since we started on the 31st of May, our first meeting, the interaction with this team is a second meeting after the one that we held on the 14th of June. So my first meeting, my first question is in relation to members of executive, because on the 27th of June, in this very same room, we happen to have the entire provincial government led by the Premier. And the Premier was upfront about the situation, confirming part of what was presented on the 14th. But members of executive, not all of them, some of them, started by giving a different view until we're able to expose some of the things that were presented by the researchers for them to concede. But what was presented today, it was very clear about the conduct of officials. So I'm interested in understanding, because the Premier right from day one was very upfront about the situation, understanding the conduct of members of executive in relation to the intervention of the administrators in the province. The second one, Chair, it's the threat, especially to the people that are doing the good work in the province. Of course, Honorable Kaula has tried to cover that one, but maybe if we can have a little bit of elaboration about what is being done, because it might compromise the entire process. The third one is about the vacancy rate at executive level, because no department can be able to function at an optimal level if you still have those challenges. What is being done about that situation? But, Chair, the other one, why we're raising I'm raising the issue of the executive. When we met in this very same venue on the 27th of June, a member of the executive said the media is busy with a narrative distorting facts, confusing communities. And we had to say, but it's not a question of media, it's a question of the situation of Northwest. Now we can see that there is stability after the intervention. So the presentation was clear about the conduct of staff. So it will assist us to understand the conduct of the executive, because with the Premier, not because it's here, right from leading the team on the 27th, it's on record to confirm what was presented by the team on the 14th. So it will be good to understand part of the executive that is there. But the last part, Chairperson, is that the temptation may be from us. I see it coming a little bit even today. The temptation from us sometimes confusing what we are supposed to be doing in relation to the task ahead of us, because we are still going to go to Northwest to meet stakeholders. Sometimes when we are meeting this team, we tend to confuse them as if they are representing the government of Northwest. So they must come here and account, yet they are presenting the situation and still going to have our own meeting as a committee to deal with all the reports coming from all the sides and make our own position, so that when we go to the NCOP, we give a report either agreeing with the position or not agreeing with it. So I'm just cautioning members that the temptation sometimes, we tend to view them as if they are representing, yet they are assisting us so that we can be able to come to a correct determination when we go to the National Council of Provinces and present our report at the end. But I commend the team for inconsistency and progress right from the 14th, and what they have presented today is giving us a much clearer picture of what is happening.
Thank you, Honorable Nyambi. What we are dealing with, Honorable Members, is a diagnostic analysis being made by the team sitting here with support of the Honorable Premier. I'm quoting the Honorable Premier on the 27th of June. If he used the words robust oversight. That's what they use. And his forte is administration. He's a professor in public administration. So I think it's the right leader for this current situation, if I can express myself on that. But thank you for your input on this point, Honorable Nyambi. Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My greetings to the ministers, our colleagues, and the team supporting the ministers. Let me also join my colleagues to commend the work done by the team as well as departments in Northwest Province. At least this kind of a report does give us a clear indication that it was the right decision to have intervention in the Northwest. At least we are speaking with one voice now. It was nothing else but a right decision to intervene, because things were not going well, not political as it was said earlier. I do want to agree, Honorable Chair, even though I do understand that this is an intervention, and also be clear that not that I don't like men, but I am concerned about the women representation on the team. Yeah, I do. I do. I am. It will be a mistake of me not to raise it, especially this month, August. I know it was not. They were not appointed now, but it's a concern, because it might give an impression that women does not have a capacity to intervene. Yet where we are sitting, we know there are so many good women out there. I thought I should raise that it is a concern from my side. Honorable Chair, I on slide 12, there is somewhere where you are talking about the 1.1 billion and also referring to 350 million that has been removed from irregular expenditure. One will want to be clarified, how did it happen? What does that supposed to mean? And it might help us, because now this thing is driven by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. They may understand well that it might assist us moving forward, now that we are in there, to have very clear indicators. I hear DG when you said, yeah, the team is in working, there is a progress. But, you know, in reporting, you will have to have very clear indicators. Let me make an example. You may want to say, we have so many projects that were done through irregular expenditure. You may not mention them, but just give us a number. In reporting, then you come back and say, we have been able to resolve so many of them. So that as a committee, we are in a position to see that there is progress. Now we do know that there is progress, but to what extent the progress is. So your indicators in terms of reporting might assist the committee. Chair, the also one example that you may use is the number of labor dispute issues on the labor dispute in Department of Health in particular, because that is where it mostly started, and indicate to us how many of those issues, disputes, had been resolved so far, so that we know where we stand. And the last thing, Chair, is that I know that we're getting this report, but you know our role is to do oversight. We're still going to go to the province and do a verification of what has been reported to us, so that we are sure so that when we go to the House and present a report on this intervention, ourselves would have satisfied ourselves that yes, what has been reported as it is there, it is happening, because we would have done a verification in terms of the oversight. Thank you, Chair.
The oversight visit to the province is definitely part of the ad hoc committee's program. Honorable Monakedi.
Chairperson, thank you very much. And also acknowledge the ministers, the DG administrators, and my colleagues. I am covered in the main by my colleagues in terms of some of the issues that I wanted to raise, but firstly also to welcome the report, which is quite detailed, pointing out to the challenges that necessitated the intervention in the first place, and also the progress that has been made in addressing the same challenges. I think the minister, the DG, have been very open in acknowledging some of the challenges that they had to deal with. But of course, we are also aware that in the other meeting that we had with the provincial government, there was a clear indication from them that they are welcoming this intervention. And I think that is what has been reiterated. That does not necessarily mean that there won't be some resistance, some other challenges from some quarters, no? And it's therefore not necessarily a contradiction to say that there are some threats of this and that against the administrators. So so that's why I'm saying I think we should welcome the fact that the task team is very open in terms of saying these are the challenges, this is the progress. However, there are still these threats that obviously they have to deal with. I also want to say that also in terms of the stability that has sort of been restored, you know, in the province should be welcomed, because with that stability it becomes then very possible for government, for this intervention to come in and make sure that they deal with those issues that have to be dealt with. But in particular, one would propose or impress on the task team to move with the necessary speed in terms of ensuring that the high vacancy rate that they have alluded to
is actually dealt with, because that impacts negatively on the capacity of the state, of the provincial government, to then, you know, be up to task, up to scratch in terms of responding appropriately to service delivery issues. So I think the sooner there's a plan to say this is how, and the time frames of how we are going to be dealing with high vacancy rate, the better. And also, as they go about, I think, implementing the intervention, as they have done, they need to continue engaging with the various stakeholders, so that the various stakeholders are actually taken on board, they are informed of what is happening, and what is being done to address the challenges that the stakeholders have actually raised with the task team in their engagements earlier on, either as a task team or as various departments. So I'm saying that engagement is very important. And of course, as this team, we are going to have to visit very soon the province chairperson, so that we satisfy ourselves in terms of what has been reported, whether indeed those challenges were there, whether progress is being made, and ultimately, yes, indeed, whether this intervention was necessary, so that we're able to come back and take necessary decision as the NSOP. So I'm saying ourselves also have to make sure that very, very soon we do go back, we do go there in the Northwest and interact with various stakeholders in government and outside government, so that we have got a all-round view of the issues at hand. And lastly, I also want to just indicate that going forward, as government, especially at the national level, we need to be able to use this experience in the Northwest, to establish some standards, some framework in terms of how provincial government are supposed to work, so that as we do monitoring and evaluation, we have got something that is common that we can actually go out and monitor and evaluate provincial government, including even municipalities. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Monakedi, also for those remarks. We acknowledge that there's progress being made. If you see where we were on the 14th of June, and we are where we are today within province, that's quite a different picture, as well as lesser protests in the province. Honourable members, before I request the Honourable Minister and her team to reply to the questions, we acknowledge also the presence of our colleagues in the National Assembly that is attending this meeting. You are also welcome. Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much. I'll respond to some issues. The DG will respond to others, and the administrators and other ministers will also respond if they would like to. First of all, I welcome all the comments that have been made. Some are questions, some are useful comments that we must take on board. Like, for instance, the last comment about maybe the last two. One, it's a comment that you must take on board about establishing some benchmarks around how which can be useful in monitoring provinces in future. I think it's a comment that we'll take on board. We don't need to answer to that. And there's also another comment that I think we should take on board about making quantifying some of the areas, like where there were wrong contracts, how many and how many have we corrected. So that's a comment that we'll take on board. I think it was from Honorable Dlamini, and she also has made a comment that, I haven't said anything, but I also felt a bit that we were not gender sensitive I think part of the problem is that each one was just appointing and not looking. And by the time we got the individual appointments, it was only then that we realized that there were males almost entirely. But it's not because we don't have women. I think it's a fair comment. But I'm just saying we maybe if it was one person doing it, then it would have been easy to say, hey. But because one department was appointing one person, then we did not see it until the accumulative appointments. So we accept that. I'm also being informed by the DG now that part of the problem is that when some of the women were approached, they didn't want to relocate for obvious reasons. Some may have families, children, and so on. So that's the note I've just got now, that part of the reason was the relocation, because it's an indefinite relocation. If you've got young kids, it poses problems, because as we know, the anchor of families are women. Men tend to be mobile. It's a global societal problem, not just a South African one. So that's part of the answer. In terms of whether the intervention, whether there is a contradiction between us and the province in terms of whether the intervention is accepted, I'm still on record saying the intervention was and is accepted in the Northwest. Now, and I think the Premier would agree with me there and everybody else, but it doesn't mean that there will not be tension between us coming into the province and the province. We must separate things that are, whether there may be tension or not, from saying you are accepting. So there is no contradiction there. Yes, there has been threats, but that does not mean that it's not accepted. But because you don't, usually such threats are not identified. You get a threat without somebody identifying themselves. So it may. I'm not saying who is threatening in particular, because we don't have. If we knew, then we would have already gotten those people arrested. Because if they threaten, it's a problem that cannot be left unchallenged. But it could also be that if I had a contract and my contract is being stopped, I may threaten as well, and I'm not necessarily a member of staff, but I'm affected by the stoppage of that contract. So we don't know. But we have discussed this matter, and we have agreed that the JCPS cluster must provide for security for the administrators and the people who are there intervening. So it's a matter that we have discussed, and we have asked the security cluster to provide the necessary security for the officials that are being threatened. The other area is about municipalities. Yes, I think it has always been said that there is a big problem with the municipalities in the Northwest. And I think 22 of them, or all of them, got qualified or disclaimers. So there is no dispute about that. But where the interventions are, the COFTA is going to intervene on a case-by-case basis, because there may be a municipality that just may need directives, for instance, and not necessarily taking over. There may be a municipality that needs a 139B. There may even be a municipality that may need 139C, which means dissolving the municipality. So you can't have a blanket. So they are looking at them municipality by municipality. What is the problem in this municipality? What is the best solution? But also there's been a discussion, including the premier as own intervention, that in the past there's been interventions of 139s, even in the municipalities in the Northwest that are still having problems, that we need to look deeper into how those interventions are made so that the improvements are made and are sustained, rather than intervene and when we leave, the municipality slides back to the original problem. So those matters are being discussed with COFTA, with the province, with the IMTT, that we need to look very closely at making sure. But that does not only apply to the municipality, it also applies to the province, that whatever improvements we make, we should try to ensure that there is sustainability of those improvements beyond the intervention. When we have left, we should be able to say years later that this matter has improved. So the other area that, of course, the question was, how can we allow the people who have collapsed the municipality to threaten? We're not allowing them. We're just reporting that there is something happening like that, but we are not allowing them. If we find them, we can deal with them. We will deal with them. So how were the administrators appointed? I've dealt with the issue of gender. There was also a complaint about race. Yes, it's predominantly one race, but it's not accurate to say it's only one race. I thought it wasn't just one race. It's predominantly, just like it's predominantly one sex, male. Yeah, we acknowledge that, but it's a short-term intervention. Hopefully, we won't be there forever. So that will be the relationship between the MEC and the intervention. I think generally it's okay, but of course, a relationship is built over time. When we meet for the first time, even with this ad hoc committee, we would have a different relationship than the relationship we will have at the end of the intervention, because you built that relationship over time. So even in this case, the relationship will be built over time, but there is sufficient good relationship to do the work. There may be tensions here and there, but I don't think those tensions are sufficient to say they will not be, we will not be able to do the work. But I hope over time we will have even a better relationship between the MECs and the intervention. In terms of the specifics around labor disputes and so on, I will leave that to the DG and to the other administrators, but I'll also ask the ministers who are here if they want to add to add. And the issue of vacancies is an important one. I'm sure there are processes that are in place to deal with them. The question of to what standard are we working? Well, when we think we've corrected, we have made the diagnosis. So about the things that we think need to be fixed, I think once those things are fixed, we should leave. But in the future, once Section 101 is in the Constitution, but there is no law that supports it, which would give details and those standards that we are talking about. For now, there is no legislation that gives those standards that when you intervene through 101, this is what you expect, and you intervene when this and this and this is happening. We don't have that yet, but we hope in future there will be legislation that will also assist in when and how you intervene. Thank you. Ministers, yes, Minister Masuta, then Minister Ngesi.
Minister, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson, and afternoon to colleagues and officials. Let me indicate that the question was specifically directed at progress report from the police. I will not pretend that I'm the Minister of Police or that I have the due authority to represent the police as such, but I would want to bring to the attention of the committee that the cluster has been an active participant in this interministerial under the leadership of our convener, which is defense. It is a pity that at the time of compilation of this report, a consolidated report of the cluster as a whole had not yet been concluded, and the cluster had not yet met to confirm it for purposes of today. Further to indicate that with regard to one of the components of the cluster, the NPA, it's public knowledge that there has been significant developments at the start of this week. So there is a transition that is currently taking place where the previous leadership is in the process of handing over to the new interim leadership within the organization. So that component naturally wouldn't have been ready for purposes of today. The SIU does have a brief summary of what progress has been realized insofar as investigations and proclamations issued relating to the Northwest question is concerned. However, it was not advisable to submit it in isolation of the cluster reporting as a collective. Just to give a hint of what I'm referring to, for example, you'd find that there were matters that were being investigated by the Hawks, that were then referred to the SIU for assessment in order to determine which of those would then and can best be dealt with through proclamation. There has, out of those matters, at least three proclamations that have been issued and in respect of which investigations are underway. There is seven proclamations, for example, that as we speak, being investigated, drafts that are being investigated, five of which I'm told are already with us at the Department of Justice, and in due course will be before me so that I can assess them for purposes of referral to the President, and the list goes on. So there is work that has been happening, is happening, but also to mention the point that the cluster is a national competence, so its presence in the Northwest was not triggered by a Section 100 intervention. It has always been present as it should. However, to the extent that developments in the Northwest that triggered Section 100 would in part have had necessitated the attention of ourselves as law enforcement, and of course as part of the collective of the interministerial, those new matters mostly are under investigation by the Hawks, and as soon as they are ready for intervention, or rather for prosecutorial decision, those decisions would be made. But as I indicated, some of them are already the subject of proclamations, presidential proclamations, at least three, that have already been issued. I will not take too much of the committee's time in this regard. The question was not necessarily directed at us, but I just thought that this context might offer some light short of a proper, a comprehensive report at this point in time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, for your input. Mr. Nezi?
Thanks. No, I just wanted to add on the Chairperson and Honourable Members, the issue, the last issue raised by the leader of the IMC on the standard and how do you know that we have been successful. The first thing that was done, and she has indicated, was a thorough diagnostic analysis to identify and point it to the real problems in each and every department, weaknesses and so on, malpractices, failure to follow the prescripts, you can mention, then, and be able to say, are these related to the structure in the departments? Are they related to lack of systems, related to lack of proper staffing and skills? These are the key areas which we've been looking at. And then you put a plan, as you have indicated, you implement that particular plan, but you only just implement. You monitor and you get reports through the various structures which have been put there. The various structures is the administrators themselves, is that team of the administrators by the coordinator, is the IMC itself, it's reporting to the Premier, and the ESCO, the Premier also interacting with the various ministers and so on. That's how you monitor that. But these should be regular reports at constant intervals. And these teams are meeting, maybe bi-weekly and so on, even ourselves, as led by the leader of the IMC. Also, we're reporting to the cabinet constantly. And as these structures are interacting with these particular reports, they're assessing progress. And even further make further recommendation in some areas when it is necessary. And I want to emphasize that normally you are able to see that progress over a financial year.
because some of the issues are financial, some are non-financial. But you need to deal with all those issues. And because you're focusing on specific areas which have been identified, and I liked that point, that does not absolve the authority of the executive and the department in certain areas. It doesn't do that. There are certain specific areas which we've identified, and we've projectized those particular areas. Hence, the reporting is going to be very important. But the last point is that even the withdrawal, it can't be a withdrawal on a particular date. It's going to depend on the progress as we do the assessment. Some of the departments might be able to reach their goals quicker than others. Others might be later on, but even that withdrawal would be a gradual one. It won't just be, we've come to a stop here and so on. That's how we see it. Thank you.
That withdrawal, honorable members, is an exit strategy. It's a strategy. It's another process. Handing over the stick. Honorable Matthew, Mr. Matthews knows that one. The Limpopo exercise and the other colleagues sitting there, the two familiar faces from Limpopo. Are there any other inputs from ministers? None? Follow-up questions, members? Pardon?
Chair, there are questions that have not yet been responded to.
Yes, let's see.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. There were a few questions that were not responded to in the ministerial responses still, and I thought I would ask the administrators in the areas to deal with them. Firstly, there's the issue of the health and the question in relation to the funds in health, the exhaustion of funds in health, which I would ask the administrator to respond to. The issue about community safety versus transport, which we had indicated initially, and I'll ask the administrator for transport and community safety to respond to that. And then there was an issue about capacitation of councillors, which I will ask the outcome facilitator for local government. Don't seem to have a representation from COCTA here with us today, but they will deal with that very, very quickly. And that was my understanding of the... Oh, sorry, then there's a final question about the 350 million of irregular expenditure. That's in education. We already have a response that's been given to us by the administrator for education. And I would request that they handle those questions, and I can just wrap up if necessary.
Why?
Which was health?
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. It's transport, because I think the question was the easy one. So the others will deal with the more difficult ones. Chairperson, I think the DG indicated that in community safety and transport, the signal or the pointers were mainly on the transport side, and in particular, Leonard Transport Management. Now, but then the other areas, more especially supply chain, then are transversal, cut across. Then they also then touch the community safety side. And then the Department of Civilian Secretariat then deployed a person who works with us and deals with the matters that relate to the community safety. So that's how... in the main, desktop analysis pointed to major transgressions in transport sites, and then as we go deeper, an on-site assessment then pointed us to the other areas on the community safety side, and that is why it was then included. But the reports, you shall see that we report from transport management areas, and then we also give an indication of what are the issues in community safety. And that's why one of the issues that was identified was then this relationship between subs and community less and the province. The one last question, the one last issue I wanted to touch is almost in all the departments, as has been indicated by the honourable ministers, there are areas of irregular expenditure, and based on the guidelines on how we deal with regular expenditure from the National Treasury, you then institute investigations. The investigations will tell you whether there is a wrongdoing, and if there's wrongdoing, we then pass it on to the JCPS cluster to deal with matters of criminal investigations. But on our side, we then follow the issues around DCs, disciplinary actions, and related issues. And that's how we then come to a determination and bring closure to matters of irregular expenditure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nick?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm answering the question about health having exhausted their funds and what's going to be done to serve. I'm answering the question on health having exhausted their funds and what's going to be done to serve the community's very important question. Chairperson, last financial year, the 17-18 financial year, the Northwest Department of Health ran out of money in September 2017. So if you look at expenditure of some of the hospitals on the BAS system, there's the critique that some of our hospitals only spent, for example, 67% you may see of their budget. You may see that another hospital spent 70% of their budget. But the over-expenditure is in a different area. And at such a stage, the province then pulls up the entire budget and make everybody stop spending. And this is why they, you may see under expenditure in some of our institutions, but the money ran out elsewhere and everybody was stopped from operating. In fact, then only COE gets paid and operations stand still. This financial year, we have certainly not run out of money yet, Chairperson. In fact, for the first quarter, if you look at our expenditure, it's around 20%, which means it's under, it should have been 25%. The reason for that is twofold. The unrest, staff only returned to operations 21 May. Number two, I've also raised this with Premier and other colleagues in the province, the Northwest Department of Health notoriously every year releases their funds late. Other provinces, I worked in two other provinces. When I worked in Gauteng, 9 April of every year, the money is released for operations. In May, we were still struggling to get funding released, and that needs to be changed for the province as a whole. Now, Chair, this to, for us to make sure that our money will go the 12 months of this year, this verification of what we are actually paying is very important. We, number one, we need to make sure we are paying against actual valid contracts. We need to scrutinize those invoices to make sure they comply with Treasury regulations and that we are actually paying for services rendered. I can make an example of the Buthelezi ambulances. An analysis that showed that for 2016 and 17 we had overpaid. So we have not yet paid for last financial year because we want to reach an agreement with a company so that we can get credit notes. That's just an example. So there is a slow process. Some of the suppliers may be complaining that we are not going as fast as possible, but we have to make sure that we don't incur further irregular expenditure and that we are paying for services that we can prove have been rendered. Chair, I do want to say, however, there are key services for which there are no regular contracts in the Northwest Department of Health. For example, doctors' accommodations at our rural hospitals. There is no contract. The contract expired 2 years ago. And I cannot not pay such a service. The doctors will go back to where they've come from, and the hospital will be without. So it's like I'm there, but I have to go and together with Treasury, get them to condone it and pay for such services. Another service is for example, security. There's a lot. There's almost close to 100 essential service contracts that have expired between 2 years and a year ago. So I'm sitting next to Mary here. Wherever I am, I'm always next to Treasury, because I'm still hoping they'll help us out with some additional funding so we don't run out. But also they'll have to help me with some irregular expenditure, Chair, because their services I cannot stop to pay for, even though I don't have a valid contract.
You done? Next.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the 350 million irregular expenditure that came
in the office of the Premier.
No, is the Department of Education.
Or Education?
Yes. The Department of Education has about 1.1 billion and irregular expenditure accumulated over the years. So when we were trying to unbundle, you know, the 1.1 actual billion to assign work to the internal auditors to investigate the irregular expenditure, we actually realized that about 350 million came as a result of the procurement of learner support, teaching support material. And where in, I think about 2 years or so, the Department of Education awarded a tender for the procurement of the LTSM, and it was contested actually through the court. Now the court ruled that the process must be started, but it must be done by a different actually group, no longer the evaluation and the adjudication of actually team from the department. So the department had to outsource it. They issued a tender. A company was appointed, charged the department an amount of 1.2 million, you know, to, you know, evaluate and adjudicate the tender. And that was done, and the company was now paid the 1.2 million rand. But while they were adjudicating that tender, somehow they got an irregular appointment where the department appointed them for an amount of 35 million to supervise the distribution of the material, the LTSM material. So somehow it was discovered, and it was never actually advertised. So they were stopped to say, you can't do this work. We have done your job. But because they have a contract, sort of SLA, they went to court to claim the 35 million, even if they have not done the job. They say we were stopped while we wanted to supervise the distribution of this. So the matter is before the court now. And while it is a litigation now, they refused to give the department a letter to say, yes, we have adjudicated this one for audit purposes. They want the payment before that. So what we have realized now is that we have actually the full evidence that we can actually disclose to the Auditor General to say, because the Auditor General says that 350 million was actually an irregular expenditure, because there is no proof, you know, evidence that the tender was issued for the adjudication of the tender. So what we are going to do now, we will take all the necessary documents, even the court papers, to the Auditor General and separate the two to say there is an irregular expenditure of 35 million, which is also actual under litigation. It's a different matter, but this 350 million, we have paid the 1.2 million, and this is the tender. It was awarded to this particular company so that the Auditor General can clear the 350 and leave out the 35 million, which is still under a contestation through the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Ministers and Honorable Members and the colleagues. We just want to state, Honorable Chair, that as part of the diagnostic analysis, we found a steady and perennial increase in the irregular expenditure over the years without any action taken by the department to address it, let alone manage consequences. So this 1.1, Honorable Member Dlamini, has been increasing over the years, to be precise, 4 years. When, for instance, the Section 101B was instituted, before the current audit started, that amount was 850 million, which had increased by 300 million from the previous financial year. So there's been this steady increase of either 300 or 250 million over the years that landed them as part of this current audit cycle at 1.1 billion. The second issue related to that one, Chair, I know it's a popular topic with yourself, relates to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. When you see this irregular expenditure increasing, you would want to make an arithmetic summation that the fruitless and wasteful would also increase. And that has been the case, even with this one. So we are interested to see the final audit and the matters of emphasis that when the report is published as to where that one stands. But the 1.1 has been escalating over the year in a very steady but very suspicious type of a fashion of constant amounts, Premier, between 250 and 300 million over a period of 4 years. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
I refer members to the presentation by the Auditor General on the 27th of June. You'll see it there. Any other inputs? Then, on the 28th of June, the National Council of Provinces passed the Public Audit Amendment Bill, where the AG will get some teeth to zoom into precisely what you've just mentioned, the wasteful, fruitless, irregular expenditure, and issue a debt certificate to recover money. And that will assist Parliament, National Assembly, NCLP, yes, to enhance more accountability. Are there any other inputs from the team?
Yes, Chair.
Down there? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and the Honourable Ministers and the Honourable Members. Maybe let me introduce myself. I am Luiso Ngoko from COCTA. Yes. Attached to a unit of the Local Government Improvement Programme. A question has been raised regarding the capacity of councillors. Chair, in this aspect, most of the work, it is actually done by our strategic partners, which is SALGA. But what we have done as the department, we have actually made an enabling environment that councillors can be capacitated. You'll be aware that in terms of Section 167 of the MFMA, it was barring councillors to actually attend training programs. The AG was saying it is a fruitless expenditure because it is the minister who must determine in the Gazette for upper limits. So we have made provision for that. There is capacity building. But most of the work, it is done by SALGA on a continuous basis. And we've seen an increase of councillors attending some programs with institutions of higher learning. But the question that maybe remains, because it is the prerogative of each and every municipality to select which councillors must attend those. In most cases, it is usually members of the executive and your ordinary part-time councillors, they are actually left out. So that is the space maybe we can encourage that even those part-time councillors, they must be included into such programs. Thank you, Chair.
That is very crucial. When you are elected as a political representative, national, provincial, local government,
municipalities. That induction program has included fiscal oversight, training in what is fiscal oversight, robust oversight, yes, performance management, because those councillors must call those heads of departments in the municipality to come and account. And then that committee in that municipality must submit a report to council. That is the procedure. As followed in NA, NCP, it's the same principle in a municipality. And that must, we must follow that. Is it being done? And I think that is where SALGA can improve on their training programs. And we told them that. They appeared before us as Finance and Appropriations Committees. Any other inputs? None. Members, any follow-up questions? None. You covered. What came out in this presentation, honourable members, is about skills. I think that we can get some report on the skills audit. Not only on this province. Yes, we're dealing now with Northwest, but in 9 provinces. What is that picture looking like? Other one is the communication strategy within this intervention between the IMTT and the provincial leadership in government. That is crucial. And what is assisting this process is the MOU that was signed and the agreements and the cooperation from the leader of government, and that is the Honourable Premier. Honourable Minister Dlamini Zuma, thank you. Thank you for the progress report you tabled today and the support of the rest of your team, ministers, staff, administrators that will assist you in the process unfolding further. And we wish you well. We will see you in the third, fourth term again of 2018. You're doing an enormous job. Honourable members, we're going to release the ministers and the rest of their team while we get to our housekeeping, referring to minutes and the way forward. So we will allow the minister and the team to depart. Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for letting us...
Order.
Thank you for dealing with us nicely and friendly. thank you.
No, thank you. We're all working towards the same objective, to enhance governance. Honourable Premier, thank you for you coming to Cape Town, and you're always welcome. The Premier of a province is the leader of the team in the provincial, in the National Council provinces. So that's the other status you have. But thank you. Thank you. Members can get a cup of tea while we wait a minute or two.
Honourable members, please be seated. Thank you. Thank you, members. Please be seated. I understand. Okay, sure. Thank you, members. The second last point on the agenda is the minutes of the 7th of August 2018, when we dealt with the consolidated document presented by the content advisor. So this is captured, I think, very adequately in the minutes. I put to honourable members page 1. I put to members page 2. Hey, do we correct?
Do we correct?
Sure. I put to members page 3. Page 3, briefing by the committee content advisor, deliberations.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, sir.
Honourable comrade, you can't say I agreed in the end of the minute in front of you. No. Please, Chair.
The documents were order. The documents were circulated. And thank you for Shamila. Yeah. Honourable members, I put to you page 5. I put the whole set of minutes to the committee. Move for adoption. Honourable Chetty moves for adoption and Honourable Mohai second the proposal. Thank you, Honourable members. Honourable Mohai, Chief Whip.
I wanted to raise it before minutes. Is it fine, Chair? Related to our discussion, I want to raise a matter that relates to our discussions that I think the committee needs to express a view regarding the intimidation that was reported on the administrators in the Northwest. We need to really express a strong view in condemning such practice in the country, especially where government intervention is intended to address deep-seated challenges of service delivery. So I think I just wanted to flag that issue, that like other committees, it should be noted that there are a number of areas that were flagged here as progress, and there are a number of issues that members raised as concerns, so that we are able to communicate consistently. I believe that we've got the support of the communication team,
yes,
that will be able to express our own views after each and every meeting as an ad hoc committee. Thanks.
Honourable Mwai, thank you. After today, the team will again
produce a consolidated document, and as on the 7th of August, come and present it to us, that we are clear that everything is captured that we want in the report. So thank you for that remark and input. Honorable Chetty and then Honorable Monakeli.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, and thanks to the Chief for reiterating what I had raised. There's a reason why I even raised the issue about this, around the safety and security. Yeah. We've deployed them there to make sure we do something that's right. And if they're not going to have the safety, they're not going to do the good job. They're not going to correct stuff because they'll be too scared. And we're not going to get the right report. So thanks, Chief, for seconding me on that part. But, Chair, more importantly, this is an ad hoc committee that's here to exercise oversight. That's our job. And members of the committee must allow the minister to answer and not try to answer for the minister. And I've been very serious, Chairperson, because I take my role in this committee very serious. There's a purpose why we do this. And this is why I acknowledge what comrades really said the day before the House. When he admitted in the Northwest there was problems because of the political jacket, because we're not going to address the issues if we push it under the carpet and try to protect parties. Whether it's the ANC, DAI, whoever it's going to be, we're going to have to address it here and be fair, because a province has collapsed because of this. So we can't just think we're going to come here and sugarcoat it. So I just want to put that note. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Monakeli.
I'm covered. I wanted to support the proposal by the Chief Whip that we condemn what has been reported here as threats against the administrators, and that we be able to communicate accordingly. Thank you.
You're right. Any other member? Honourable members, the way forward. As I indicated, our staff will now capture what was presented today to become part of the consolidated document, and then take us again through that briefing. Now, we are about 95% ready to report to the NCOP. We have to include a visit to the Northwest Province. I've looked at the NCOP program again this morning, before this meeting. And in consultation with the Chief Whip and the House Chair for Committees, Honorable Nyambi, to look at space where we can go and conduct that oversight visit. At least for 3 days. You can't do it less than 3 days. Looking at the magnitude of the intervention. So there are different scenarios. The one is to do it between a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or the other scenario is the first week of the constituency period, because then it's not interrupting any other business of the NCOP, but I emphasize, in consultation with our Chief Whip and Honorable Nyambi, to look where we can do this and then report to the National Council of Provinces. Are there any comments from our Honorable Monakeli? I recognize you.
Yeah, I think overall I agree with your input, your proposal, but I thought it should be possible to do this perhaps over a period of 2 days. Say Thursday and Friday, or Wednesday and Thursday. So I'm saying if 3 days is going to be difficult, we should try and see if we can do this in 2 days.
The leadership of the Chief Whip will assist us a lot. I noted Honorable de Blanche and then Honorable Moai.
Chairperson, I am in agreement with on your
I am more or less in agreement. Isn't it possible, you know, like the Honorable Monakeli said, that, you know, maybe there is, while we're in, you know, busy here still, one day where something that people serving here are not that much involved in whatever is happening here, that we can add a day from that side. I'm just asking. You know, we have a lot of constituency work also, and you know, to go into, you know, the constituency period, that must be really a last resort. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Moai, Honorable Chetri first, and then Honorable Moai can conclude.
Sure. Thanks, Chair. Chair, I'm also cautious on our constituency period because it's going to be difficult, firstly. Secondly, Chairperson, I think I want to go with your proposal around the 3 days, and I'll tell you why. We're dealing with a lot of departments. We're going to have to sit through late, even if we're going to get it done in 3 days. And if you're going to do it in 2 days, I'm saying the committee must give assurance that we must be willing to sit until 10 o'clock to interrogate the reports or whatever we're going to do on the visits. So what we can do is do the oversight visits during the day and any other report back in the evening at the hotel, if we want to do it, and we can do it in 2 days' time. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Moai.
Chair, I think we hear the comments of members, and on Tuesday in our WIPS forum, we will discuss, look into the current draft program that already has been adopted, and then try to persuade one another on which days we can shift the program around. So we'll discuss that, so that the view that cautions against constituency office, World Water, I think all of us would agree why we'd want to utilize constituency period in this time. But I want to suggest that if the committee can agree that yourself, Chair, together with Honorable Chetty, Honorable Kathy Dlamini, and Honorable Munagedi here for obvious reasons, if you can meet as a small team and have a sense of what program you want to put on the table, so that when the committee meet, we know more or less through your research team and so forth, you can meet, especially, I'm saying this, honorable members, so that you just enrich what the program will look like, so that we don't say, I know if we are going to negotiate the period, we are unlikely to succeed to have 3 days maybe, but we need to make compromises to say what can be done if we were to use 2 days effectively and the other days traveling, if we don't succeed to get three full days. Ne? So if we can work on just because we must be clear who are we consulting, what structure of the program, so that we circulate something to members. And when we meet again, we finalize the program. All right.
Thank you. While we are here, after we adjourn, can we come to the front and just share some ideas? Because we are here now. We are leaving tomorrow to our different provinces, coming back on Monday evening, and Tuesday is that WIPS meeting. We must be practical in what we are saying and what we want to do. So please, if you can assist us. And then our staff can put this thing together. Thank you, honorable members. This meeting is then adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to the legal team. They've been very quiet today. No major disruptions.
Yeah. 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 Ye